Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You reached the Black Male Show. Now, this show is usually hosted by simply Nene, but it will not be today. Nene is unavailable. She's in getting some medical attention, and this is her sister. This is one of her older sisters, so we are asking for her radio family and her family in large to keep her in prayer and to just let her be in your thoughts. And also, I'm going to need you to help me do this show today. She is so dedicated to what she does, and her passion is so strong to reach out for you that even while she's sick, she's trying to make sure that this show goes on. So I'm trying to assist with that. I know the topic today was going to be Lamar Odom and what people's thought was about that. So initially I wanted to say that before we get into what thoughts are, first and foremost, that I want to send prayers and positive thinking to Lamar Odom and his family and his children, because whatever we think and is not the issue is that this is a person's son, this is a person's loved one, this is a person's father, and his existence means something, and it is needed. So we just want to send prayers out to his family and also to him, that the Lord cover him and bind him in recovery. So with that being said, that was the issue. And we're also waiting for some other people to call in. So if the other co-hosts are on, please feel free to jump in on the conversation. And we're working on that right now. So we're having a bit of technical difficulty, but as I said, this show is actually a labor of love, and this is Ayanna's passion, and she loves her audience so well that we're trying to get this done. So I am her sister. I am sitting here, and I am so technically unsavvy that I even have problems doing my cell phone. I just got a Facebook account like the other day, but I'm giving a shutdown. My cousin Lillian is trying to be she's being the board person, but we don't know how that's quite working out. We're trying to get the other people on the line. So we're just asking that you stay with us. And also right now we're on the campus hospital campus, and we want to say that the work that people do is very important. So when you do see your medical people, say hello to them. Give them a call, because without them, we can't make it. We need them to tend to our loved ones. We need their knowledge and their patience in order to assist our loved ones with getting their health and care. And without them and the diligence that they do and dealing with the various personalities of all people of all races and all temperaments, that this machine, that which is the healthcare system in the hospital, would not work. So for all the hospital workers, I want to just thank you, from everyone to the parking attendant, to the guards, to the nurses, to the front desk staff, to the doctors, to the orderlies, because you all work in such a unison that you're very much needed, and we appreciate it. So I'm really standing outside trying to get this done, because I'm trying to be courteous to the other people in their privacy. But I'm going to walk over here to Lillian and see if I can help her run this board real quick, because I was outside.
Okay.
Hello, Carla. Are you in there?
Hello, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's the Rev.
Who is it?
Mr. Rev.
Hi, Mr. Rev. How are you?
I'm not a mister. I'm a miss. I'm just the
I can't hear well, and I'm not supposed to have a cell phone on, so I'm walking back outside. So please excuse me. As I as I said, I'm not Nay Nay. I'm not.
Yeah, it's all right.
No,
it's
I can't.
Right.
Ask her to turn it down. But we want to thank you for the show today. We want to ask you, it's a radio show. That was the guard telling me that I'm too loud. Ayana's not available today. Ayana's not feeling well. And I am her big sister, and I've taken her to the hospital so that she can feel well. So she's unable to man her show today. But as I said once before, that her passion is so strong for what she does that I'm giving this a galleon try. I just got a Facebook account. Can't even work my cell phone. So help me out. Did you hear what I was saying about Lamar Odom?
Yeah, I did. And we're definitely praying for his family. As well as his wife, too. Because she's getting all the backlash right now, unfortunately. And so it's got to be a crazy time for everybody. But I'm just praying that, you know, the people who love him the most are at comfort and, you know, can have some type of peace in the midst of this. Unfortunately, because he's like a high-profile guy, the media and the paparazzi and everybody, like, it's not able to be a sacred moment for them.
Right.
And, you know, I grieve with them for that because I can't imagine having to deal with all
of
that.
The last I heard,
he
was in a coma. Is he still in a coma or has that situation changed?
No, they said he's still in a coma.
Okay.
And I've read some reports that say he's brain dead. Not sure how bad it is, but as I said, it's one of those situations where you're waiting and you just praying for the best and trying to prepare for the worst. And it's no words that really can, you know, kind of address it or kind of deal with it, not in a way that they probably deserve.
Correct. But, you know, it's a saying that, the ink has been written and the pen has been lifted and the ink has been dried, and that the Lord knows you even before you even knew yourself and before your parents were created. So with that being said, you know, we all have to understand that our DODs have always been determined. Our date of delivery on this earth was predetermined. Our date of departure on this earth is determined. It's that dash in between. And so as people go on through their DOD, some things we have to understand we don't have control over. So it was nothing that his ex-wife could have done to stop what his DOD was. Maybe things or action could have been done different in a person's life to make how their DOD came about or who they were with when that DOD happened, but when the Lord decrees something, there it is. So we don't know. He could come back, but first and foremost, we have to understand that his being is bigger than us. It's bigger than our social media. And in everything, we deserve respect in the things that's happening with us.
Exactly.
What do you think about that? Mm-hmm.
I agree totally. Like, you're right. Completely.
Right.
That's what I said. This is one of those things where, you know, you got to pray for the worst. I mean, pray for the best and prepare for the worst, you know. As I said, unfortunately, they're not going to get no peace with this. The media and all of that is just horrible, you know, the way that whole world works.
What is the world in general? Because
we
all think we cyber superstars with these Facebook accounts and Twitter, Instagram. We all think we cyber superstars, and that's how we live our lives. You have to understand you're mad because somebody said this and you're mad because somebody said that or somebody didn't friend you or like you. And how important is it really? How important is it really? And I mean, why don't we just be courteous to each other while we're here and have a level of decency with each other? That person that you're so damn mad at today, was it really worth it? I mean, how are you going to feel when they leave the earth? So maybe that's what we need to think about today, that how do we want the people that we love and care about to know that what happened might not have liked it. I might not even like you or what you're doing, but I'm not that mad at you.
Right.
What do you think about that?
For me, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I actually was in D.C. I just left on Sunday. I came for the whole Justice or Else. And one of the things that you're saying is actually one of the things Farrakhan spoke about, you know, basically how we treat each other and how the way we treat each other affects all of us. You know, whether we actually want to look at it that way or not, you know. And so for me, I think we at a critical time right now, especially where we are in society as people of color. Everybody is trying to come up, wanting to come up, you know, not just individually, but as a collective, you know. And so the way we treat each other is critical. And that's the one thing that we can't seem to get a handle on. You know, I'm actually in Arkansas. That's my locale. That's where I live right now. And people can't talk to each other decently. The violence is, you know, shooting through the roof. And so for me, there is this epidemic that's affecting the way we relate to each other. And I think the social media and all that has a lot to do with it, unfortunately. You know,
yeah, because people are just so disrespectful and rude to each other. It's just unnecessary.
It is, but we conditioned like that. That's okay, and that is that. That's actually cool. Matter of fact, and I should aspire to that. And if I'm nice, I'm a sucker.
But when did it become rude? Because I was taught that when you walk in a room, the person who walks in the room should say hello. You say good morning, good evening, and goodbye. And in the middle, you say please, thank, and excuse me. You don't have to like each other. You don't have to want to eat dinner with each other, but you say those things. And I was always taught it takes one breath to say hi. So why couldn't you speak? There's
right.
No reason. So, but when you speak to people or you're cordial, something's wrong with you. Well, something's going to be wrong with me because I'm going to speak. I'm going to have manners. I mean,
right.
I may not have $1 million, but I'm going to have manners.
Right.
Because what two people realize is that manners and decorum will get you in doors that even education cannot.
And that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That'll take you a long way. Please, thank you, and I'm sorry. My mom always told me, never have
mm-hmm.
too much pride to say any of those things, you know. But the flip side is I look at, you know, a lot of the youth before I went into full-time pastoral ministry. I was a youth pastor. And the kids are not being taught those small things, you know.
When
grown folks is in the room, don't interrupt them while they talking. You know, little things.
Well, I'm going to say this because y'all never going to hear me on the radio again, but they need a beating. That's the problem. I got a beating. I was scared of my parents. So they need some discipline. And I didn't get time out. I got a whooping.
Yeah.
I didn't get
both hands.
Right. You could talk to me, but I'm not your friend. My mother was never my girlfriend. We were friendly. But I had fear of my parents, and we don't have fears. We're all, you know, what's some more say, grandma in the parking lot dropping like it's hot. No.
Right.
And that's not to do with because I had a young mother and I had a young grandmother. But I was their priority, not
right.
the rest of the world. And I think that's where it has changed. People's children lots of time are no longer their priority. Everything else is shining and glitter. And if they forget those basics. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I thought you was done.
I am. Go ahead.
But for me, the one thing I look at is, you know, for mothers who had young mothers or who, you know, they're now young grandmothers, you know, this whole cycle, who actually teaches mothers how to be mothers? And that's the one thing that, you know, I'm looking at now in society, because when I'm looking at education and what are the things that people need to have resources to be taught but don't know where they're going to get it, and parenting classes is one of them, you know. And so for me, it's just like, man, if you make a mistake or if you have a child young, you know, and you wasn't ready or you don't know or you didn't have a good example, whatever the case may be, how then do you figure out what type of mother you're going to be to your child? You know, I don't have any kids. And so I haven't went through that thought process or the psyche of, you know, what goes into that. But for me, and I'm, in my late 20s, I got a birthday coming up week after next. But because I wasn't in that situation, I never had to deal with the thought process of what am I going to do?
What?
You know, and so I don't know how that goes, but I think we got to be more proactive about it somehow.
Well, if you look, in the beginning of time, people, if you were considered, if you were not married by 13 or 14, you were considered an old maid. So in some instances, well, in all instances, that age is not an excuse, because more than that, people got married young and they had children and families young and they maintained the family. So this having children young actually is nothing new. What's new is the mentality that you want to be anything but responsible for the things that you created. I mean, so where's the excuse? Because you said, oh, they having kids young. Well, they've been having kids young since the beginning of time. And they've been parents. So what really is that excuse? But then, too, the thing about it is, and like I said, I'm not going to be on the radio again, so I'm just going to say what I'm saying. When you were born, you belonged to somebody. Now kids don't always, they're not, the family is not vested in each other. As I always was taught, you know, you're a James. I'm like, what does that mean? And as I learned in life, that means something. What it means is that I belong to somebody. I'm accountable for my actions because I represent a clan. I represent a people. So my actions, you know, you're a James. You can't do that. So I belong to somebody. Oh, you know that girl, she part of the whims. Or, you know, but I belong to somebody. And I think that's what's missing. It's not a new game out here. It's the same old game, same old time, and people been doing it forever. You got to make up your mind that your family life is more important than anything else.
But what steers people in that direction these days? Because our values are not the same as what they've been. And the way the things we do, you know,
priorities.
But it's becoming a culture, though. And
it has.
I guess that's my whole point.
It has.
You know.
It has.
And how do you redirect culture?
In steady actions. Like, I will say, I ate dinner every day with my family. We had dinner. We had Sunday dinners. So that was nothing to have. We had a cookout didn't consist of everybody who I know on Facebook.
You didn't have a cell phone, did you?
No, I had a quarter, and then I had 50 cents in my pocket. But
changed the game.
but in the same instance, my grandmother didn't have a phone that she could use. I mean, so it's just difference in times. But what I'm saying, when I had a cookout, the cookout was all my family was there. We played Pocino. Everybody bring your pennies. And we didn't need, no matter how the size, we would have other people. But it was mostly on our family, on our events, it was family gathering.
Right.
We didn't need to rent the Coliseum to have a wedding. We was happy if the wedding was in, whether it was at a venue or either was in the backyard. It was about the celebration of us. And I think that's the difference. People live their lives for what, you know, everybody is a superstar in their own head.
Right. But then the flip side is, you know, the disposability of everything. So
that's true.
We don't value each other the same. I could just go get another you if, you know, we not getting along or if I'm not getting my way or whatever the case may be. And so the way we engage one another is it's just different. But I look at all of the other influences. You know, I'm a part of that age that started out with no technology and ended up with it all. So I've seen the transition over my lifetime.
Right.
And so for me, I know what it's like when everybody in the room and ain't nothing to do and we looking at each other trying to figure out what we finna play. We gotta figure something out. We gotta make up a game. We gotta, you know, but we had to interact with one another. And we had to find a way to coexist in a positive way because our parents wasn't gonna listen to a whole bunch of bickering, arguing, and crying and carrying on. You know, and so now when you could just stick a tablet in a kid's face or you could stick a phone in a kid's face and tell them to sit down somewhere and be quiet, isolation is the new norm. But it's not the norm still, even for the human, the spirit, the condition that we're in. You know,
and also it's exposure
and
education.
We need creativity. We need education. We need it all, you know. And so for those things being lacking, and then us also realizing that with social media, we intake, too, way more than people ever did. Other people's emotions, thoughts, all that stuff. All that stuff affects us. And so, to me, unplugging is the answer. But that's blasphemous to some people now because, oh, look how far we've come and look how much we have access to. But what does that really mean for who we are as people and how we deal with one another as people? And I think that's how we lose in our humanity.
I think that what you're saying is a very valid and true point. And once again, I think it starts with manners, respect. And also, when we always talk about what the youth don't do, I observe sometimes, and I see people being so disrespectful to the youth. They walk in front of the youth, and they don't say, oh, excuse me. It's some the youth was the next one in line, but we just go ahead in front of them. You don't say, excuse me. As if because we're older that they don't deserve the same amount of respect, and that's not true because we show them by example. And first and foremost, whatever your age is, you're a person, and all people deserve respect. And you have to be careful how you treat a people before you maybe entertain the angels. You never know.
That's it.
And
that's
so
it. The flip side is them kids are so smart, man. The one thing I'm realizing about this generation is that they bout that life. They got so much heart. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they got issues with old folks is because they finally realizing, man, y'all really, just a bunch of talk. Y'all really not about that action.
Mm-hmm.
And we are. I can't listen to you because you're going to lead me astray. You're going to take me away from myself. I think about that that pool party, the video that came out at the beginning of the summer with the kids, with the little girl who had the police officer push her down and put his knee in her back. Did you see that? Did you hear about that? It took like
Didn't you hear me earlier say I just got Facebook?
Okay, but listen, you might still have Google.
And
but,
I don't do all that. Oh, go ahead.
You know, basically, they were at a pool party. These kids were at a pool party, and they were invited by another kid. And apparently, the pool was supposed to be private. It was private property. It was in a gated community, and they were technically not supposed to be there. So they was considered loitering. And trespassing. So when the police showed up, he gets this maybe she was 16 years old, maybe 100 pounds soaking wet. But when I say it was like straight pushed her on the ground, kneed her in the back, the whole thing, and you had these kids that was right there bucking up to the police, didn't care. They got guns. Didn't care that they're the police. All they were looking at is the fact that they're wrong. And ain't nobody gonna do nothing about it.
Well, you say we don't, you know, that the older generations and to the kids that they don't see anything. And to some degree, you know, we still have the organizations. We used to rally in our organizations. We used to use organizations to get points across. And as time has gone on, and as we have delved into being a multicultural community, we no longer support those organizations that were a voice for us, but yet we expect them to do the same amount, have the same level of strength, even though they're not even getting support from their community. But when it's a rally, well, where's the NAACP? Where that? You got to support them. The NAACP's the annual fee is minimal. Everyone should be a registered voter. Everyone should be a card-carrying member and active in the NAACP and other organizations so that we can hold them and we can be a part of them. If you're active in something, they need to hear the new voices coming in. They're looking for them. But if you don't participate in these, you can't expect them to be there and still give the same level of support.
But the flip side is, what are they really doing?
But what have they done? Well, the NAACP is not going to go out here and fight the police. No, they're not going to do it. But they fight in paperwork. See, one thing we forget is documentation trumps conversation all the time. There are laws in effect every day to minimalize our rights and our privileges as people of color. We think because we all can vote now, we don't have the Jim Crow laws, that, well, you know, those bills are coming back around for revision. People, the mentality of that still good old boy mentality is trying to defeat it. Some countries, I mean, some states have gone back to poll tampering or hindering voters to come out. So this NAACP is always fighting to keep us with our rights. Our rights are on. They have had success because we didn't have them automatically. They have success, and what we fail to realize is at one of my family gatherings, we were doing quizzes and stuff, where it actually was a scholarship program, and one of the questions that was the quiz was, who was born with the right to vote? So everyone assumed since I was a child of the 70s, I graduated in 82, that would have been me. And I said, no, I was not born with the right to vote. You were not born with the right to vote unless you were born after 1965. And who assisted with that? Our civil rights leaders of before. So because now people fought so hard for us to have rights, and the generations that come up behind that think that, you know, they never knew the struggle, they feel as though those things are automatically in place. No, they're not. And some of them have expiration dates on them, and we still need to be fighting for them. We should be fighting. We should, but it's not just the NAACP. It's every organization. We're going to rally for so hard. I saw a picture. I did see this on the internet, and I was pissed. I saw a picture of it was a Georgia prison where this young man had a collar around his neck, and he was kneeling on the ground like he was a dog, and the belt was being held by two other inmates, and everybody was the same color. To me, we all should have been there rallying. Like, I want to know where he is right now. I want to know what things were done. I want to know why could this happen in this date and time, and why do we have so much hate toward anybody that we are now treating each other like animals? So the picture is a lot broader. So when you ask, what can my country do for me? What can you do for your country? You can't always sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. What you going to do? Are you volunteering to make sure that child who does not eat has something to eat? Are you going through your closet as we're blinging to make sure the things that I don't need and I'm packing it up so that others may assist? Because when we take care of each other, not just as a people but as Americans, then we have less problems. I can't send money over to China. I can't send money for foreign relief when there's a child in Texarkana who is a U.S. citizen, whether they're white, black, Puerto Rican, who needs assistance. I can't do it. That's my thought. And like I said, I ain't going to be on the radio again, so I'm just expressing it. But you can go ahead.
No. I completely agree. But the flip side, though, I mean, I'm looking at it big picture, too, in terms of who are the people who are disenfranchised, oppressed, and that are on the losing end of this stick? You know,
we all are. Because whether you're white, Puerto Rican, Asian, we all want the same things for our family. We all want the same things for our children. And if everybody is being fed and taken care of, then that's less than it's a known fact that when people's basic needs are taken care of, there is less racial tension and hatred and violence. But when those basic needs are not being met, then that creates an underbelly of violence and disdain for humanity.
But charity will never be a sustainable means of
No, it's not charity. Right. So
there's a difference between charity and justice.
It is, but also when you – so first off, I'm not going to teach you how – I'm not just going to give you a fish for the day, but I'm going to teach you how to fish. And also, if I teach – if you want to educate a nation, you need to educate these women because the mothers of the world will educate everyone. If you want to educate a nation, educate its women. So it's as well as it's men, truly. But what I'm saying is – one thing is not the cure for anything. It's not one big answer. But if everybody would put an effort into being part of their community, being part of their humanity, and our community is not just ourselves. First, charity does start at home. Love that neighbor. So the person's in the house with you, be polite to them. Then be polite to the people that's outside. Okay, and that carries over. That's what I mean by that. It's not going to be one thing. I think that the misnomer is it's not going to be one thing. It's going to be a series of things. It's going to be a collective action of anything because we're not robots. We all have a different mentality. What may work for one person may not work for another. But if everybody would just give it a try, then things could get better. So when I walk out the house and I walk by people, I say good morning. I say good evening. And sometimes people look shocked like she's retarded, but that's okay. When I walk in the room, I say good morning, good evening. And you should see how it changes the environment. When I go to the store or something and I walk past a black male, I say, oh, hi, how you doing today? Because he's a valued part of my world, whether I know him or not. So I'm giving him common courtesy.
Right.
When I see an elderly person, I hold the door. Ma'am, can I help you? Is there anything? That's common courtesy. Because if we do those little things, then it changes slowly. That's just my point of view.
Yeah. And that's what I said. I think that's a start.
But yeah, I think
you,
I don't.
You were talking about the food and the extra clothes. And for me, that's cool, but it's not cool because then it creates this perpetual dependency of whoever you're giving to on you.
But how do you know? Look at. I was just watching TV where they had one of those Access or whatever, and they had Oprah on there, and they were talking about people who did charity work, and Oprah talked about how someone donated something to her. And that gave her a spirit of hope to that the world was better than what she knew. But she took that. So somebody she didn't know dropped a seed on her. And look how it grew. You don't know who you're touching. It may not be, but it may touch someone else who say that the next time I get something, I'm going to share it and the work that they do. So I have 4 or 5 coats that I'm not going to wear. They're either not my style or whatever, then they're not what I'm wearing. How does it hurt me to take that coat and put it in a bin so that someone else may be warm? Because if that person is warm, maybe they can function. Maybe something about their basic necessity might function, and maybe then they may not have to bust me over my head. I don't know. Because all they want to do is be warm and fed just like I am.
Right, and I get that.
Right.
But again, this—that's good charity. At the end of the day, and I say this because I work with the homeless population every day, day in, day out, and there is a need systematically that's not being met. So if you don't have the sanctions or the foundational protocol in place, there needs to be met on a consistent basis that causes. Because at the end of the day, coats run out.
They do.
And usually they run out before everybody get one. So then,
okay,
what?
But,
you know, and then when you got people sleep.
So is the answer not to give anybody a coat? Is the answer to give nobody a coat?
It's not that. To me, yes, you give coats, but we give coats and then give ourselves a pat on the back like there's no more work to be done. And
no, I'm not saying
issue.
That there's not, no, that there's
that,
not
you know,
work to be done.
The end goal. That if the
but
end
that
goal
is
just for me to pack up my extra stuff and get it done. For me to
right,
feel
but what
good
I'm saying
and
is
feel like I've contributed to the system of alleviating poverty, that's not it.
No,
so
but
I,
what it
I
is
said,
is
I feel
that
like
it,
that's a start.
No, it is a start. So what I'm saying is that no one thing is the cure all for everything. But if we all just, and I use the coats as an example that if we all just make an effort, you don't know what that effort could do for someone else. It's not about my ego, Ed. It's about hoping that my creator sees that as you have blessed me, may you use me to assist someone else. because it's not about me. Somebody might have said, you know, sometimes with the things that you do are not about what you do. It's how the creator used you to get something done. You don't know. And I can't rule the world, but I can make an effort to assist as best I can with whatever it is that I have. Do you understand what I mean by that? I teach also, and I know sometimes it's the kids may be hungry, or this, some may be an adult, but you know what? If I have extra, I'll say, well, let's get this or do that or whatever, because I know if you can get through this and grasp this information to help you do something, then you have a better chance of going to that next level. But I'm just saying that if we all make steps, if we all treat people how we would want to be treated, and we're just a little bit more courteous to people, and we're a little bit more thoughtful than that, the world is just about me. That's my point. I'm not saying it's the cure-all for everything. I'm saying, but the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a step. That's my thought.
Okay, I agree with that. I'm about to say we could go back and forth all day because for me,
no, it's a, but see,
people,
see, the
people
thing
do
about
that
it
and
is,
they stop there, and that's it. Because then we,
but you know what,
well,
it's,
I did
someone,
my part.
But it's someone who understands completely, that understands emphatically with what you're saying. There's someone who understands emphatically about what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is that if two good-hearted people are trying to do something, maybe we've reached two people today, and we'll reach, and they'll reach somebody else. It's a cure-all, and it's a step. Because first off, I can't think my answers are the reason that they are the answer for everything. But I use my resources. So what I'm saying is that the work that you're doing each and every day is doing something for somebody, and it's reaching somebody. And so don't stop doing that gallant effort, whatever it is that you're doing, because don't think that it doesn't make a difference. That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Right. So how much more time do we have?
About 22 minutes.
Really? So what else do we want to talk about? We started on this journey with talking about Lamar Odom and sending out prayers and thoughts and concerns for him. And I'm asking you also to send your prayers and thoughts and concerns to my sister, because I'm just filling in for her today. But she, like I say, she's so diligent and passionate about what she does that she dialed it up. And for me to continue this, you know, for me to say that, please, the people that help her all the time and you all who work together. So I thank you for helping me to do this. I really do. Because, like,
oh,
I said,
absolutely.
I just got
to quit. Glad to be here. I thought we were going to have some of the other hosts that were online, but I don't know what's going on today. But I hope everybody is doing all right.
Mhm. Or maybe I'm out. I'm sitting outside, so I would not have disturbed the other people out of courtesy, and I'm not running the soundboard at the same time. So I'm not quite sure if the sound. I'm hoping that the soundboard person has put other people on there. Anybody else call? No, nobody else has called in.
Oh, okay.
But I thank you for calling in.
Oh. That's all right, Harry.
With two or more gathered, it can work out. It can make a difference.
That's
so
it.
That has totally been it for the day. So I don't know, but did you attend the Million Man March this weekend in Washington D.C.?
I did, and I thought it was very moving. Just to
mm-hmm.
be. And the unity of all the people. Like, it was packed out there. It was horribly packed. when I say horribly, I don't mean that in a bad way. But,
right.
Man, it was a lot of us sucking up air out there, a whole lot. But it was also so beautiful to see the unity and the people out there that was gathered for the common purpose and, you know, people networking and meeting people and, you know, just...
Mm-hmm.
In the spirit and the synergy of what was taking place, listening to the speeches, they had awesome setup or pre-lineup, because it was almost like, you know, if you go into a boxing match and you waiting on the main event, but you got all of these preliminary fights.
Correct.
But they had a good lineup. They had good people who represented several communities. So you had the Native American community represented, the Hispanic and Latin American community, the Haitians and the Islanders. I mean, it was a smorgasbord of people of color who have been oppressed in this country by governmental and systemic means, all wanting the same thing, which is basically freedom, you know. And if we can't be free under your system, then give us reparations and let us go our separate way, you know. And so that was more like the or else, but he didn't really go into that part. He spoke about a lot of different things, though. You know, it was a lot presented. But the overarching thing was, man, we need each other and we got to stick together. And so,
right.
I totally appreciated the opportunity to get us all in one place at one time.
Right.
But for me now, it's like now that everybody goes back to their respective locales, make sure the work don't die. Make sure it kicks up a notch. Make sure the organizing and the preparation and the securing of resources goes to another level. Because at the end of the day, what he said they were asking the government for was 100 million acres of land. And he says land mass wise, that's about the size of California. But for 30 million African Americans, that equates to roughly about 3 acres apiece. And so I began to think about all the people that I work with and all of the different circles I sit in and the people that I know and the trends that I see among our people. And I said, if all the black people around here right now got 3 acres and some money, what would we do with it? How would we spend that? How would we utilize what is given to us? Not just for the sake of ourselves, but for the sake of our people and the collective community? And would that be something beneficial with the skills and the knowledge that we have where we are right now? And it's something that I'm still thinking about because I don't know.
Well, reparations were given to the Chinese people when they put them in internment camps. Reparations are still being given to Native Americans. So why not us?
We've never rallied for them. We've never been on one accord long enough, I think, to be able to ask long enough, because it's not an overnight anything.
Oh, no, but it's centuries overdue.
We fight each other a lot.
Say that again. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I said we fight each other a lot.
Yeah, we do.
We fight each other a lot.
But that's a mentality that was cultivated and maintained from slavery, and in our survival of trying to, you know, look out for ourselves, we have kept that going. But I don't think that's everybody. And I think just like one of the biggest mistakes is we think that one person speaks for all of us, and that's not true because we're so individualized. And that if we could realize that your success does not take away from my shine.
Right.
Someone else's shine does not diminish my shine. Your blessings are not my blessings. I'm glad when you get a blessing. That means it's like a lottery. My number coming up.
That's it. The one thing I realize is that we're so much of a creative people that I long for the day that we begin to have enough faith in ourselves that the gifts that the Creator has given us will make room for everything that we need so that we don't have to trade our time for money when our time is invaluable.
And I think some of it
have.
Too.
Oh, huh.
But then, you know, keeping it real and keeping it 100, I think the misconception has gotten a little twisted. In the sense that, for me, keeping it real is that reading is fundamental. I'm going to learn how to read. I'm going to be educated. I'm going to seek education. I'm going to seek knowledge because I come from an educated people. So now, or when you can speak and educate your, you know, verbalize your thoughts, are you speaking white? You doing this? No, I'm I'm black, and I'm speaking black because I must be speaking because you can understand me. I'm not special. I'm normal. But why is if I have a level if I choose to seek my education, oh, you a sellout? If I choose for success, I'm a sellout. That is so not the case. So if you really want to think about keeping it real, when there was no job, somebody that you didn't even know that was hoping that the generation after them would have it better, clean toilets, clean poops, worked on the railroads or did whatever they had to do so that they could keep their families together. And now if it's not diamond and platinum, we don't do it. So really,
right.
You're not keeping it real, and you're not keeping it 100, because to keep it real and 100 is to make sure your basic needs are done and that I keep my family together.
Yeah.
And I do and I let the next generation be better.
Yeah.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just that whole family piece. You know, the one thing that I think that we forget a lot of times now in our present context, you know, is that the family was the beginning of a nation in the old days. You know, when you go back and you look, and this might just be the preacher in me, but in the Old Testament, those names, those individual names became nations, you know. And
right.
So when you do well by your household and you make sure that it's together and it's right and it has sound teaching and all of that, and that then goes into the community to affect others, then that then passes on to everything you put your hand on. And when we begin
mm-hmm.
to think about our ways of being and how, you know, our lifestyles are more than just lifestyles. You know, our habits become our character, you know, and all of this begins to get ingrained into what people see when they associate us with, you know, different things out here.
Oh, yeah, because we got on red bottom shoes and we got on Prada bags and we have on this and that, but you don't have the amount that you have on your back. You don't even have that in a bank account. You don't even have that
right.
in a savings account. So
or an asset.
To me, that's not keeping it 100. That's not keeping it real, because economics is the key to success. You can say what you want to say, but you don't have to like me. You don't have to respect me. But you will respect me because I'm working just like you working, and my economics make this world go round. So I'm gonna use my economics. If you don't speak to me well, I'm not coming back in your business.
Right.
I was telling someone that I patronize minorities, and I'm a fair with my money, but I also seek to put my money back in the community. And I take,
right.
I want to just say an example. It used to be a time in America that if it were more than 3 or 4 black people gathered, that was against the law, that was a reason for lynching. And some of the places, the only places that you would not be bothered if it was more than that number would be the church, would be the beauty shop, and a barbershop, and those have been always the cornerstones. So we have an industry that we created. When someone else said that you're unemployable, we won't give you a job, we created a billion-dollar industry about taking care of ourselves, but we have given that industry away to everyone else. You will go get your nails done at the Asian place, then they don't go to school. They just keep rotating apprenticeship licenses, but you won't patronize that black nail technician. And if that black nail technician makes one mistake, I ain't going back to her no more. Really?
Right.
But she's raising a black family.
Like
why won't I give
her
my money?
She's supposed to
give me
a discount.
Right. Or why
like
I'm
going
to give her? Why? She has a family. The electric company doesn't give discounts. The grocery
right.
store don't give her a discount. So why won't I want to pay her? Because she wants shoes and socks and underclothes and basic necessities for her child, too. So why won't I patronize her? I'm just saying.
Yeah. And when we do that, man, things will be so much better. Because the flip side is everybody got to hustle. Even folks that got regular jobs then found other ways.
But I used to
it.
Do something, and I want to challenge our audience today to do that. I used to put MM on all my money, and that stood for minority money, because I wanted you to see that my money was important. But I put MM on my money, minority money. My minority money spends a lot of money. and I spend money on a lot of disposable things. And so why can't I send $20 to an organization that helps children read? Why can't I spend $20 to the NAACP? Why can't I support another organization that's trying to do something? Let's invest in ourselves. Why can't I send money to the United Negro College Fund? Because if I educate you, we tend to fail to realize that they go to school now, they say they don't have enough books, they don't have enough resources. Oh, but the jails are aplenty. Yeah. The jails are aplenty. So what is that about? Because when you take that census, you already incorporate that you got a jail waiting for my black child, whether it be male or female.
Right.
Then you're going to degrade them, dehumanize them when they get there. So why can't I invest in making sure that the step that even if you're not my child, after I, you know, that I contribute something to another child getting an education? And hopefully maybe that child, that child will contribute to another person getting an education. And that child will continue and we will pass it on.
Pass it on. And we have to. Because when I tell you, I went to an HBCU. And it was so vital to the core of my understanding of my purpose. Like, that's where I found myself, at the black school.
mm-hmm.
You know, and so for me, black people got such a high level of buying power. But the flip side of it, you know, we'll graduate from our black school, then go to a white school and give money to our white school and not give to our black school. And we have to reinvest. Even our time, you know what I'm saying? Mentoring a kid goes so far these days because there's so many things that are competing for their attention and their allegiance. You know, just pouring back into them, reminding them like, hey, bro, you don't have to become a victim to the streets or to anything else other than what you feel like God made you to do. You know, one of the things working in the church, I realized that for people that are more conservative, there are still some things that are discouraged. And I had a kid that could draw. And I mean, when I say draw, I mean from her mind, come up with an idea, 13 years old, and make it look so real. And she says, I want to be a tattoo artist. And then you got older people that say, oh, no, you shouldn't be a tattoo artist. You need to go to school. And I said, you do need to go to school. So you can major in business, so you can own your own tattoo shop. You know, but we're not encouraging that type of thinking either, you know, in our kids.
But that's not just
entrepreneurial spirit, huh?
But that's not just what our culture, you know, old people to get a good job and stick with it. But and they want the best for us, but sometimes they have not had the level of options that we have. And so sometimes they get a little nervous.
Okay.
That's how I see it. Because you have to understand, some older people, they lived in a segregated world and a segregated mentality. And so when you push too much on them at one time, they like, oh, wait a minute, hold up. We got to go back to basics, get an education. They mean well, but we evolve as we go.
Right.
Yeah. So what's our time left on this program?
I'm about to say, we got 5 minutes.
Okay.
We got 5 minutes. I wish we had a closing song. But I don't think.
Well, I want to. There was a book that I read many years ago, but I do keep it with me. It's called Visions for Black Men by Dr. Knight Akbar. And I do encourage the audience to get that book, search that book, because that educator is really saying. Very valid. And you may not get a song today because you're asking us to really stretch us out. Because we're not tacky here, okay? We're substitutes. So I'm going to let you lead out with the end of conversation and close.
Are you going to read it?
Whatever you choose to do. If you want to speak, if you want to read, that's fine.
Oh, I thought you were about to read a clip from the book. Okay, I apologize.
Oh, no.
I misunderstood. Well, for me, I'm about to say, just, you know, for the listeners out there, just to encourage you, wherever you are, you know, in your respective locales, this week, I'm challenging everybody, go do something for somebody else. And do something that will affect their mind and their spirit. One of the things I'm challenging myself to do is to give 10 compliments a day.
Okay,
that's
beautiful.
That might not seem like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It might not seem like a lot, but you don't realize that it's people out here suffering with self-esteem issues. It's people out here that got problems in their lives. And so for me, the one thing I realize is that when I give a person a compliment, I see people's face light up. I see it pop up. It means something to me, you know? And so whatever you find that means something to you, that is valuable, and pours into somebody else, man, I'm just challenging somebody to do that. But if it's not a challenge for you, don't do it. Do something that's actually going to challenge you. And that's all I got. I pray that everybody have a blessed week and that everything you put your hand to be fruitful.
Well, I thank you, and I thank you for your participation today. I thank you for your assistance. It was my pleasure to assist my sister in her efforts. Once again, keep her in your thoughts and prayers. And remember that a journey starts with just a step. So hopefully, and it's an old thing I always say, you ask, how do we do it? You know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So if we all just do something, we're going to get it done. So thank you, and everybody have a good evening and a good week. Thank you.
All right. Peace.
Okay, bye. Okay. Bye-bye.